Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert. Psalm 48 verse 1 from the New King James Bible says this: Great is the Lord, and greatly to be praised, in the city of our God, in his holy mountain.
I'm with Hillel Fold, a global speaker. Now Hillel, Israel is fighting a war with Hamas, but is Israel winning the media war?
I mean, I think that that's a pretty objective no. You know, I think we're not only losing it, I think we're pretty much being obliterated. But I believe that, you know, there are many reasons for that. But I believe the primary reason is that our enemies have no problem just straight up lying, whereas we obviously stick to the truth.
Do we need more people speaking out for Israel?
I mean, I don't, in my opinion, it's not a question of numbers. I think it's a question of, you know, the narrative. I mean, their narrative, again, whether it's true or it's not true, and it's not true, is very simple. You know, you're oppressing us, free Palestine. I mean, you know, our narrative is a lot more complicated. And so, you know, that's, they're just easier on the ears. It's easier to consume their story. But also, you know, they just, you know, showing fake pictures of fake babies and lying constantly about the numbers based on Hamas's, you know, Gaza health ministry. When you're able to lie, you could just make up whatever you want. And so they do. They make up whatever they want and they just make us look like the devil. And we are not, you know, stooping to that level. And so when you have the truth versus the, you know, the lies are always going to win.
Of course, that grabs human attention and it grabs the news as well, doesn't it? Has it shocked and surprised you to see the rise in anti-Semitism and the student protests?
I mean, yes and no, because, you know, anybody who pays attention to history, you know, knew to expect a rise in anti-Semitism. The question is when, and I can't say that I thought it would happen in my lifetime. So that does surprise me. But the fact that there's a rise in anti-Semitism in, you know, yet another empire, just like there was in ancient Egypt, ancient Rome, ancient, you know, Greece, ancient, you know, and Germany and Russia and every other empire in the history of the world, doesn't surprise me. This is the script. It keeps repeating itself.
You're originally from America. Are Jews safe in the U.S. and around the world today?
Yeah, I'm from New York, and the answer is absolutely not. You know, we see what's happening in the streets of New York and of L.A. and London and every other major city. Jews are absolutely not safe, which, you know, is really just unbelievable that we've gotten here in my lifetime. And, you know, a lot of people will respond and say, but are Jews safe in Israel? Because after all, we had October 7th, which is a valid question. But I, you know, to me, there's a fundamental difference, and that is that, you know, the IDF has a mission, an objective, and that is to protect me. Now, they failed at that mission on October 7th, and there's no debating that. But the mission still exists, whereas outside of Israel, no one's protecting the Jews. There is no mission. There is no one caring and no one protecting us. So, you know, that is a very fundamental difference, in my opinion.
Do you think it's now time for Jews all around the world to come home to Israel?
I mean, listen, I'm not going to belittle the challenges of picking up and uprooting your life and coming, you know, to any other country, let alone the Middle East. It's a challenge. It's not easy. And, you know, that's an important point, because it's very nice to say, just pick up and come here. That being said, as hard as it might be, I believe if someone had a gun to their head, they'd get on a plane, which means that if you're not getting on a plane, what you believe is that what's happening today outside of Israel does not constitute a gun. To that, I say, what does constitute a gun? Because it seems to me that everything's already happened. You have anti-Semites in Congress. You have people being beaten in the streets. You have people actually being murdered. You have, you know, synagogues being targeted and people's windows being shattered. So it seems to me that everything that could possibly happen on the anti-Semitism front has already happened. So if someone's not getting on a plane to come home, my question is, what has to happen?
Now, my app has been going off this morning with alerts telling me that rockets and hostile things are coming across from Lebanon. Do you think Israel needs to go into Lebanon now and deal with the situation, the problem that's happening in Lebanon?
I mean, listen, no one likes war. I definitely don't like war. My son is in the IDF, and, you know, but the reality is that the northern part of Israel is on fire, and it's been on fire for months, and 70 to 80,000 people are displaced from their homes. Clearly, that's not a sustainable situation. And so Israel has and will continue to do whatever it can for some sort of a diplomatic solution. But it seems to me that Nasrallah is not very interested in a diplomatic solution. And that is for a very simple, fundamental reason that most people don't realize. And that is that our enemies are fighting an ideological war, whereas Israel is fighting a defensive war. All Israel wants is to live in peace. We have absolutely no, you know, ideological reason to conquer Gaza or Lebanon. We want to live in peace. Whereas our enemies, their ideological war is to kill as many Jews as possible. So it seems to me we're playing a different sport. And so Israel, like it's always done, has done everything it can for peace and will continue to do so. But what's going on right now in the north is highly unsustainable. It looks like war is, you know, imminent. And I don't think there's really any other choice at this point. Israel is being bombarded for 8 months with thousands, tens of thousands of rockets and missiles and, you know, and drones, and not, you know, not to belittle the amount of casualties. Of course, you know, as an observant Jew, I still look at what's going on and view miracles that we haven't had, you know, 100,000 casualties, but this is unsustainable. Israel now needs to defend itself, just like we've always done. And just like we've always done, we won't start the war, but we will win it and we will finish it. And that's what's going to happen. And Lebanon will sadly, tragically be sent back to the Stone Ages. And the world will do what it always does. It will blame the Jews. But the reality is, if you have a problem with Lebanon being sent back to the Stone Ages, your address for those complaints are Nasrallah and Hezbollah, not Israel.
As their father with a son in the IDF, is it a very worrying time for you? And are you proud of what the Israeli army are doing at the moment to protect this nation, this land?
Well, first of all, you know, beyond my son being in the IDF, not sure if you're aware, but my older brother, Ari Fold, was murdered in a terrorist attack about 5.5 years ago. And so, you know, this is obviously a conflict that has affected me personally. And so, you know, I'm very much in it. Now, to say that October 7th wasn't a colossal failure, the IDF and Israel security forces is a lie. It was a colossal failure. That being said, people don't realize what Israel is up against. I mean, the amount of armies and countries that are actively fighting Israel in this war, whether it's militarily or diplomatically, is a very long list. And Israel is fighting a war, a complex war, the likes of which the world has almost never known, between the urban style of Gaza and the dense population there, plus combined with the North, and then add, you know, all the diplomatic pressure from America, from the State Department, from South Africa and the International Court of Justice, and on and on and on. You know, we're dealing with a very, very complex situation. So given all of that, yes, I'm very proud of the IDF and very proud mostly that we've tried so hard to find a peaceful solution, both in the North and in the South, both of which fell on empty ears. And it seems like, you know, military pressure is really our only option. So the answer is yes, I'm very proud of the IDF.
Do you think that people today around the world have forgotten about October the 7th and this terrible massacre that took place?
So, I mean, you can't really separate what happened on October 7th and in general what's been happening in this conflict for 75 years and anti-Semitism, because the people already took to the streets on October 7th before Israel even fired up a single F-16, right? Before Israel even retaliated, there were marches across the world supporting the Palestinian cause. So it's time to take the mask off and stop the charade. This isn't about land. It never was about land, because if it was about land, then the Palestinian people, quote unquote, would have accepted the partition plan in 1947, as well as every single other initiative over the last 75 years where Israel offered them a state, including, by the way, in 2005, when Israel evacuated every single Jew from Gaza and handed it to the Palestinians on a silver platter. And they could have created a state, but they don't want a state. And they say it, by the way. This is the funny part and the ironic part of it. There has never been a Palestinian leader that has ever said, yes, we want to live alongside Israel. No, they say they want dead Jews. It's what it says in their charter. And yet the Western world refuses to believe and listen to them, which is so ironic, because if you're not going to listen to them and you're not going to hold them accountable for their words, presumably because they're a bunch of little kids throwing a tantrum, then how are you offering a bunch of little kids throwing a tantrum a state? Make up your mind. Are these responsible adults who should be held accountable, or are they children? If they're adults that deserve a state, then maybe listen to what they say. And so the world hasn't forgotten about October 7th. The world didn't care about October 7th in the first place. And that's a sad reality that we've had to deal with throughout our history.
Well, it's the same thing in Lebanon as well, isn't it? Israel left southern Lebanon, and then Hezbollah just moved in. And of course, now we've got the situation today where we're getting rockets and drones fired into Israel.
Correct. And amazingly, the world hasn't said a word.
How does Israel get their hostages back? Do you think it's possible?
I think it's a very complex situation because, you know, the two objectives of this war, I should say the three objectives of this war, which is eliminating Hamas completely and totally, plus getting our hostages back, plus removing the threat from our borders, they're somewhat mutually exclusive. Because if you're going to remove Hamas and obliterate and eliminate every single one of them, then how exactly do you expect to get your hostages back? And if you're going to negotiate with Hamas to get our hostages back, then how are you going to obliterate them? So the things, you know, the objectives that were defined in this war are pretty mutually exclusive, which begs the question, who defined these objectives? That being said, crazier things have happened. I mean, there is no military strategist in the world who can explain to you how Israel won the Six-Day War, or more recently, how Israel detonated 99% of ballistic missiles and drones fired at Israel from Iran. I mean, that night was an open miracle. It really was. And so, you know, crazier things have happened to the Jewish people over the years. And I believe at the end of the day, as an observant Jew, that God is in our corner and things will be okay. I can't tell you that on a military level or on a logical, rational level that I understand how they're going to be okay, but I believe that they will be okay.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, have you seen the hand of God and the miracles of God during this 8 months of the war?
On a daily basis, you know, from October 7th, that was a super duper dark day, and that stands alone. That's an independent statement. But, you know, if you really think about it on a logical level, they really should have killed 150,000 of us, not 1,400. I mean, they had unlimited access to automatic weapons for 8 hours, you know, and so they really could have killed. I mean, they could have wiped out Israel. And that was their plan, by the way. So that day, as far as I'm concerned, as dark as it was, could have been infinitely worse. But beyond that day, the Iron Dome is a modern day miracle. And all of the rockets that fall in empty spaces in a country smaller than New Jersey is a modern day miracle. And the list goes on and on. I believe this war is one big miracle. It's a miracle that's hard to swallow because, again, it's devastating. But I see God in the entire, from beginning to end, in every element of this war, I see God.
How did you get to hear about October the 7th?
I was in synagogue, like most, you know, religious Jews. It was a holiday. And slowly but surely, the rumor started to circulate. And we didn't have our phones because we don't use them on holidays. And sure enough, the kids in the neighborhood, and I call them kids because that's what they are, started to be called up, you know, and drafted to the army. And then we knew something bad was going on.
Now, you're into tech. Tell us about that, what you do. And is tech actually helping to keep Israel safe?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been in the tech industry in Israel for the last 15 or so years. I'm sure you know that Israel is, you know, a superpower when it comes to innovation across all sectors of tech. And, you know, I started many years ago what we call today blogging. I started writing about tech on the internet, and really kind of one thing led to another. And over the years, I've worked with tech companies from two guys in a garage to Google, Oracle, Microsoft, and many, many others. And, you know, it really, it's really remarkable to see how Israel, this tiny little country, and one might say the worst neighborhood on earth, has accomplished. And on a personal level, on October 7th, I pivoted and I, you know, reallocated my resources to Israel advocacy. And tech plays a massive role in this war. Again, starting from the Iron Dome, which is unbelievable technology, but way beyond that, whether it's technology being used in the tunnels in Gaza that Israel is using to eliminate Hamas terrorists, to, you know, intelligence and where those hostages are being held and where those Hezbollah leaders are being held. You know, tech is playing a massive role in this war.
Of course, BDS wants to try and stop Israel advancing, but the reality is Israel has been involved in so much of tech that if you want to boycott Israel, then you'd have to really live in a cave, wouldn't you?
Correct. I mean, it's really, you know, it's a joke. It's really a joke. I mean, you cannot, in a very real way, and I'm not talking like in a internet meme kind of way. I mean, in a very real way, you cannot live a life in today's modern, you know, world without Israeli technology. I mean, try to unlock your iPhone without the company that Apple acquired, PrimeSense, that created Face ID. You won't be able to unlock your iPhone, and you won't be able to water your garden without drip irrigation. And you won't be able to get to work without GPS. And you won't be able to use your iPhone without the chip that was developed in Israel. And the list goes on and on and on. You know, if someone you know has cancer, chances are, you know, the treatment that they're being given was developed in Israel. So, you know, to boycott Israel is, you know, impossible. Impossible. I mean, if you're creating a website, you know, for BDS, you're probably creating on a platform that was developed in Israel.
Wow. What is your prayer for Israel today?
My prayer is what it's always been, and that is for, you know, us to live in peace, even alongside our enemies. I mean, the Abraham Accords, you know, proved, and our peace treaty with Jordan and with Egypt, despite them being, you know, not our best friends, right? And unfortunately, Egypt has been very treasonous, or they, you know, really did backstab us with the tunnels. But, you know, my dream and my prayer is that we can live in peace amongst our neighbors. And more importantly, they'll be able to live in peace alongside us.
What's your website, Facebook page for people who would like to know more about the work that you do?
Sure. My name is Hillel Fold. It's hillelfold.com. And I'm online, you know, on Twitter and Instagram and all those guys. My handle is Hills Fold, H-I-L-Z, like zebra, F-U-L-D, my last name. And yeah, you can, you know, follow me on X, on Facebook, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, YouTube, TikTok, wherever you want.
Well, Hillel, thank you very much for sharing today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to meet you.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.